Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, December 15th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Numbers Showing Less COVID Impact on MMH Region, by Stuart Doreen. The numbers appear to be favoring the health of Midland County residents when it comes to COVID. While vaccines are now not expected to be delivered until at least Wednesday, according to the Department of State Health Services, the community got a shot in the arm from the latest statistics from the state. The set of numbers have to do with the percentage of COVID-19 patients in the hospital compared to the number of patients in the region that includes Midland and Odessa. On Monday, the Department of State Health Services reported it dropped below 15% for the fourth straight day. Friday was the first day in more than 3 weeks that the percentage dropped below 15%. The 14.46% report on Friday was followed by percentages of 14.5, 14.37, and 14.24 on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, respectively. Should that percentage stay below 15% in the region for another 3 days, then state-imposed restrictions on businesses, including restaurants and bars, will be lifted, according to Governor Greg Abbott's executive order. At that point, businesses, including restaurants, would be allowed to return to 75% occupancy. Restrictions were put into place in November after the percentage of COVID-19 patients in the hospital, compared to total number of patients in the region, climbed over 15% for 7 days. It remained higher than 15% for another 18 days, peaking at 18.02%. Region J, as it is known, also includes Andrews, Brewster, Crane, Ector, Glasscock, Howard, Jeff Davis, Loving, Martin, Pecos, Presidio, Reeves, Terrell, Upton, Ward, and Winkler. MMH's showing improvements. Improvement in the numbers also was seen in Monday's report from Midland Health, which showed occupancy in the COVID critical care unit was down to 22 of 31 rooms, 71%, which is well below the 78% 7-day average. Other numbers show the community on a positive trend include 83% occupancy percentage on the regular COVID floor, below the 85% 7-day average, 28% occupancy of total rooms by COVID patients, down from the 29% 7-day daily average. 4 straight days of occupancy rates by COVID patients below 30% compared to total rooms. Before December 11th, Midland Health reported 29 straight days of percentages of 30% or higher. A 25.5% positivity rate from tests that took place Sunday, lower than the rate the last 3 weeks, 30.4% from the week ending November 28th, 27.8% from the week ending December 5th, and 26.2% from the week ending December 12th. This article is entitled, Council May Give $1 Million to Businesses Hurt by Pandemic, by Caitlin Randall. The Midland City Council will consider today using $1 million of its Federal CARES Act funding to help small businesses affected by the coronavirus pandemic and shutdowns. If approved, 963 businesses will receive a $10,000 grant to make up for lost revenue because of closures and decreased customer demand, according to an agenda packet for today's meeting. The remaining $37,000 will go to Midland College for administering the program. Council member Jack Ladd, who added the item to the meeting's agenda, said the proposal is part of a pilot program between the city and Midland College, and the funds will be used to help Midland's most vulnerable businesses. The program, called the City of Midland Micro Grant Assistance Program, would be available for businesses that, beginning on March 27th, were forced to close, voluntarily closed, or have experienced fewer customers because of the pandemic. Grant applications would be processed by the Midland College Business and Economic Development Center. But the City of Midland would make the grant award decisions according to planning documents. Midland College would also market the program. To be eligible, businesses would need to employ 20 or fewer employees, be current on all fees owed to the city, not have declared bankruptcy in the last year, and not have received any other COVID-19 economic assistance, whether federal or local. Nonprofits would not be eligible to receive funding through the program. Businesses that receive grants would be able to use the funds on payroll for employees, rent, healthcare benefits, reimbursement for lost revenue, and expenses such as personal protective equipment. The city previously created a similar program in partnership with the Midland Development Corporation, but it was terminated because those who applied either did not qualify or had already received economic assistance. The council first considered appropriating $500,000 to a microgrant program on November 17th. That item was voted down unanimously after some council members suggested Midland Memorial Hospital would benefit more from the money. They approved $1.4 million in funding for MMH on November 23rd. The city received $7.9 million in CARES grant funding through the Texas Department of Emergency Management, according to City Director and Finance, City Director of Finance Mark Mason. The money so far has been allotted to the Midland County Hospital District for an additional testing site, antibody center, and equipment. $1,376,572. Midland ISD for remote learning equipment, $503,041. Casa de Amigos for its rent and utility assistance program, $500,000. Reimbursing the city for COVID-19 related expenses, $296,416. The West Texas Food Bank, $200,000. Midland Health for extended testing site hours, $100,000. St. Anne's Church for its rent and utility assistance program, $100,000. St. Vincent de Paul Society for its rent and utility assistance program, $99,000. The Boys and Girls Club of Midland for additional staffing, $92,000. Purchasing equipment and supplies related to the pandemic, $38,735. The City Council will vote on funding for the Small Business Microgrant Program during today's council meeting, which starts at 10 a.m. This article is entitled, Two MISD Board Seats to be Decided Today, by Stuart Doreen. Midlanders will know tonight the final two members of the next Midland ISD Board. Today is election day for the runoffs for Districts 1 and 4. On the District 1 ballot will be James Fuller and Michael Booker. Fuller received the most votes in the District 1 election on November 3rd. In District 4, Steve Vargas and Katie Joyner are on the ballot. Vargas received the most votes in that race on November 3rd. Voting takes place from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. today at four locations: Midland County Annex, 2010 North A Street, MLK Junior Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane, Midland Chin Baptist Church, 2800 West Louisiana Avenue, and Odessa Country Club, No. 1 Fairway Drive. Number of voters. The Midland County Elections Office reported last week that 428 people inside Midland County voted in person during the two-week early voting period. That includes those in East Odessa who voted in the City Council elections. There were another 416 ballots by mail. The Midland County Elections Office reported 368 votes cast through the mail and during the early voting period in District 1 and 454 in District 4. The 822 total votes in those two districts were more than the 522 votes during the January 28th special election for District 2 City Council. During that race, 232 people voted on Election Day. On Election Day in November, 4,713 people voted in the District 1 election, and 4,405 cast a ballot in District 4. An open seat, and one that hasn't been for decades. These runoffs are polar opposites when it comes to the seats themselves. In the District 4 race, Vargas and Joyner are running for a seat currently held by John Kennedy, who opted not to run again after serving one term. The District 1 seat is held by Fuller, who has represented his district nearly longer than the rest of the board combined. He was first elected in 1988. Reversal of fortunes. There are precedents for the second-place finishers in the general election coming back to win the runoff, even inside Midland ISD. In 2018, Heidi Kirk collected the most votes in a three-person race inside District 5, but was forced to go into a runoff with John Trichetti III because she didn't collect the 50% plus one vote necessary. Trichetti won the runoff 645 votes to 594. Other examples of runoff reversal of fortunes include Terry Johnson's win in the Republican primary runoff for county judge in 2018. After finishing second to James Beecham in a three-person race, Johnson collected 51.72% of the vote in the runoff, winning by 165 votes. Midlanders might also remember that Ted Cruz won the Republican Party's nomination for U.S. Senate in 2012. Despite collecting 34.16% of the primary election, Cruz dominated the runoff, winning by 16.64 percentage points. Notables. If Vargas wins today, it will mean the next board becomes minority-majority, with two Hispanics and two African-Americans on the seven-person board. If Joyner wins, it will put a female back on the board. The Midland County Elections Office reports that boundary line problems that existed during the November 3rd election have been fixed. The next Midland ISD board elections will take place in 2022, when districts 3, 5, and 6 will be on the ballot. Election Day. Today, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., Midland County Annex, 2010 North A Street. MLK Junior Community Center, 2300 Butternut Lane. Midland Chin Baptist Church, 2800 West Louisiana Avenue. Odessa Country Club, No. 1 Fairway Drive. Note, contact the Midland County Elections Office if you have questions about whether you are eligible to vote in the election. Where is MISD District 1? District 1 in East Midland is bordered by Loop 250 to the north and includes areas around the following campuses: Milam Elementary, Lee Freshman High School, Pease Communications and Technology, Coleman High School, General Tommy Franks Elementary, the former Crockett Elementary, Washington STEM Academy, and Carver Center. Precincts 201, 203, 305, 308, and 310. Where is Midland District 4? District 4 starts in central Midland near Bowie Fine Arts Academy and works its way across the city, picking up neighborhoods around Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Academy, Midland Alternative Program, Lamar Elementary, Long Elementary, Burnett Elementary, and then works its way into southwest Midland and into the county. Precincts 101, 104, 105, 109, 109A, 208, 212, 303, and 307. Official final results from November 3rd. District 1, James E. Fuller, 1,704. Michael Booker, 1,506. Matt Reyes-Galindo, 1,503. District 4, Steve Vargas, 2,089, Katie Wallace-Joyner, 1,869, Joel Deal, 445. This article is entitled, Downtown Micro Market Continues to Expand, by J.C. Lewis. The micro market that was started to give small business owners the opportunity to lease a small space. Hannah Stroon and her sister-in-law and business partner Lauren Johnston started the market because they knew how difficult it was to start a small business in Midland. Most lease spaces are too big or are expensive to renovate, Stroon said. The duo thought about the concept of creating a small or micro space, which they have seen done in other cities. It began with our passion for small businesses and their struggles, she said. We wanted to make a way for it to be easier. and to encourage other entrepreneurs to reach for their dreams. The Women began in June 2019 with about a 1,000 square foot space and designed 6 micro shops off Wall Street. Now the micro market has expanded to the Lorraine Street side as well, with 4 more shops that have opened or are in the process of opening. Current shops at the micro market include Velvet Mesquite Boutique, Corporal Ray's Coffee, Four Dolls Boutique, Coco Bananas Boutique, Cousins Creamery, and K. Rene Salon. Struan co-owns Cousins Creamery with Johnson. Also at the micro market is Struan Studio Hannah Nicole Photography. One space is used as a daily rental for small business owners who are experimenting with opening a storefront and would like to try it before signing a lease. Downtown Midland has been a struggle, and now it's finally starting to come back to life a little bit now, she said. Centennial Park has also brought a lot more foot traffic downtown, which has increased business, Struan said. We wanted Micro Market to be a one-stop shop where people could come get coffee or men could pick up flowers for their wives after work, she said. Struan and Johnson periodically bring in local vendors for Lorraine Street Market. It stems from the passion of trying to build up downtown and how we are constantly getting messages about what we have available for rent, she said. We knew when we started Micro Market that we wanted to do some kind of street market eventually. Construction is set to begin on phase 3 of the micro market. Struan said during this difficult year, it is still important to support small local businesses and keep them open in Midland. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled, Dixon, MISD Receives 36 Superintendent Applications, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon reported Friday that the Midland ISD Board will be briefed this week about the 36 candidates who completely filled out applications for the superintendent vacancy. Dixon told the reporter Telegram that the list includes applicants from Texas, California, Oregon, Tennessee, Minnesota, and New Mexico, and female applicants. The breakdown of candidates include 19 sitting superintendents and 15 who are assistant, deputy, or area superintendents. She added there are candidates from the West Texas region. While Dixon said superintendent candidates typically first ask about the boards, the first question from most on this was about why MISD's academics are so low. Dixon was brought on board not only to help as assistant superintendent, but to also work on the search for the next superintendent. She told the reporter Telegram that she did not apply for the position and has talked with all the candidates who applied. Board leadership previously stated that the next board, including those who won in November and in runoff elections, will pick the district's next superintendent. Dixon said Friday that those candidates who are believed to have won their respective runoffs Tuesday will be invited for a closed session briefing about the superintendent search during a special meeting of the board on December 18th. Runoff elections for Districts 1 and 4 will take place today. The board will have its regular Board of Trustees meeting Monday at Bowie Elementary. Dixon said there are candidates with experience in Lone Star governance and the system of great schools. Candidates from districts the size of Midland ISD, and also from larger school districts. Dixon said her conversations with the board lead her to believe trustees are focused on instructional leadership.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, December 15, 2020. Season of Giving. Permian Basin Builders Association members donated gift items to the Warming Tree Project of Senior Life Midland. Association members include Larry and Callie Stevens of Stevens Construction, President Brandy Barnett of Tom Woodruff Signature Homes, and Bob and Patty Dozier of Dozier Custom Homes. Wells Fargo donates $29,000 to WTFB. Wells Fargo has donated $29,000 to the West Texas Food Bank as part of its Many Hearts, One Community holiday campaign. Wells Fargo is distributing grants to 200 food banks in the Feeding America network, according to a press release from the bank. The donations fulfill the company's commitment to to help provide 82 million meals to families in need, according to the release. Gas prices in Midland, Odessa. Midland, Odessa gas prices are unchanged in the past week, averaging $1.95 a gallon on Monday, according to Gas Buddy's daily survey of 156 stations. Gas prices in Midland, Odessa are 4.4 cents per gallon lower than a month ago and stand 41.9 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The following are historical gasoline prices from December 14 in Midland, Odessa, going back 10 years. 2019, $2.37 a gallon. 2018, $2.58 a gallon. 2017, $2.47 a gallon. 2016, $2.02 a gallon. 2015, $1.84 a gallon. 2014, $2.46 a gallon. 2013, $3.03 a gallon. 2012, $3.26 a gallon. 2011, $3.24 a gallon. 2010, $2.91 a gallon. Source, Gas Buddy. Meetings today. City Council, 10 a.m., City Council Chambers. City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Midland College Board, 4 p.m., 3600 North Garfield Street, Scarborough Student Center, Carrasco Room. KMB offers tips about holiday recycling. Keep Midland Beautiful has provided tips about holiday recycling. The amount of trash increases 25% from Thanksgiving to Christmas, according to KMB. Cardboard waste is abundant during the holidays, especially with so much online shopping. Midlanders can take all cardboard boxes to the Citizens Collection Station, 4100 South Smith Road, or BRI Recycling, 26 West Industrial Loop. KMB said boxes should be broken down before being placed in the recycling bins. KMB also reminds residents that they cannot leave items outside of the recycling containers. Other recycling reminders: remove packing pieces, bags, and instruction manuals from cardboard boxes. Styrofoam peanuts, packing bubbles, and packing pillows should be taken to a local shipping mailing store for reuse. Formed styrofoam from around TVs, etc., is not recyclable in Midland. Wrapping paper and tissue paper can't be recycled. Reuse it next year. Paper plates and cups are not recyclable. Most plastic containers that food comes in are not recyclable. Look on bottles, cups, and containers for numbers 1 and 2. Only those plastic items can be recycled. For more information, call KMB at 688-7745. 2020 holiday shipping dates. Recommended send-by dates for expected delivery before December 25. USP Retail Ground Service, Tuesday. First Class Mail Service, December 18. Priority Mail Service, December 19. Priority Mail Express Service, December 23. Source, United States Postal Service. Alzheimer's Association needs volunteers. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit mssconnections.org. Alzheimer's Association needs volunteer advocates and committee members. Volunteer hours offered for individuals completing online education programs. For more information, contact the Area Program Coordinator, Janet Cross, at 570-9191 or jcross@alz.org. American Red Cross needs volunteers for their International Humanitarian Law Youth Action Campaign, which is a virtual opportunity. For more information, contact Stacy Pickett at 425-7637 or stacy.pickett2redcross.org. Chocolate Decadence, which benefits Aphasia Center of West Texas, will be February 12. The event, co-hosted by Concho Resources, will be virtual. The party package sponsorships include chocolate treats, wine, charcuterie, and an online auction. For more information or to purchase a sponsorship, contact Ashley McAlpin at 699-1261 or info@aphasiawtx.org.
This is the opinion page. This column is entitled, MISD Would Be Smart to Expand IDEA Partnership, by Stuart Doreen. Some may forget that the original plan for Travis Elementary in Midland, one of the worst performing campuses in the state, was to turn it over to an Arizona-based charter operator. Midland ISD, however, couldn't close a deal with legacy traditional schools. I believe this will be one of the most significant moments in the academic turnaround of education in Midland when we look back in 5 to 10 years. Ultimately, Midland ISD went with IDEA Public Schools, something I admittedly have been excited about since the announcement was made. Midland ISD needed someone with a record of success to be that partner at Travis, and IDEA has that record. As recently as 2019, 6 of the top 100 high schools in the state, according to U.S. News and World Report, were IDEA campuses located in the Rio Grande Valley. Brownsville ranked 15th, Edinburgh 16th, San Juan 24th, Mission 54th, Donna 59th, and San Benito 79th. I got my first tour of IDEA Travis, as it is now known, on Friday. IDEA officials recently reported 8 months of reading growth and 1 year of math from its operations through November, and they invited me to see the methods behind the improvements. It was eye-opening. 20 or 33 students in a class. It was teachers teaching and students listening and being responsive. Some might say that is expected from a school that has control over its student population. IDEA Travis is a choice school, after all. That would make sense, except more than 500 current students were students at Travis last year. IDEA leadership talked about students being as much as 2 years behind where they needed to be coming into this school year. Even at the pre-K through second grade levels, the percentage of those reading on grade level coming into the year was 2%. By December, that number rose to 28%. But don't take my word for it. Midland ISD Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon said she went to IDEA Travis last week for a one-hour meeting. She said she was fascinated when she left 3 hours later. It was my kind of teaching, Dixon said. She said IDEA uses a phonics-based prescriptive curriculum with kids grouped by ability. If that required kids in different grades, even 2 grades apart, being in the same room, that's how it needed to be. There wasn't going to be kids held back by teachers having to teach to the lower end of the classroom or kids at the lower end being lost with instruction they couldn't follow. Teachers are also going to follow the script, she said. Indeed, IDEA Travis principal Haley McCarthy said teachers spend time every day learning how to do their job better. That training might be in the form of live practice, receiving feedback, or learning new explicit skills. There are clear directions how to teach, McCarthy said. Once those pieces are begun to be put together, it becomes logical how so much improvement takes place, even with a teaching staff that is 90% first-year teachers. I saw real-time teaching, Dixon said. They were literally teaching reading comprehension across the curriculum. Their successes were our failures. One former MISD executive, a principal in residence, said she looks forward to the day that an MISD staff are learning from each other and talking about best practices. I expect one side will be willing to sit at the table. Whether others are willing to join them remains to be seen. I left IDEA Travis thinking about the opportunity for Midland and its school district. IDEA Public Schools has inked a deal with local philanthropy and businesses to open more campuses in Midland and Odessa. At this time, those campuses opening up in Midland are not slated to be partnerships, but those discussions continue. If early results are a sign of things to come, Midland ISD leaders will be foolish not to expand the partnership. Actually, it would be disappointing if Midland ISD families don't insist on more partnerships with IDEA. I don't think the latter will be an issue. There was a wait list of more than 300 this summer. I can't imagine there will be less interest when parents hear that IDEA Travis's growth rate was the highest across the IDEA network. For the record, I want all schools to succeed. I want to tell our readers more stories about data that shows academic performance is turning around or reaching new heights. The best stories of the past few years for me included South Elementary's rebound from failing status over 5 years to earning a Texas Education Agency distinction status in 2018 and 2019. Another was the rise of Bush Elementary to one of the top four performing campuses, including 5 designation distinctions. In the cases of South and Bush, principals Letty Amaya and Aaron Fong were praised for their leadership. If you listen to IDEA Permian Basin Executive Director Bethany Solis, she has the best of the bunch in McCarthy. The early success at IDEA, Travis, will create a lot of discussion in the education community about leadership, teaching programs, willingness to adapt to what is working in our community, and the frankly uncomfortable conversations that are sometimes required when change is necessary. IDEA is here and will impact education in Midland moving forward. How much will depend on Midland ISD, its leaders, and staff. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled Cut COVID Stimulus Checks, Not Expanded Unemployment Benefits, by Carl W. Smith, Bloomberg. With a deadline looming, stimulus talks between congressional Democrats and Republicans remain deadlocked over 4 issues: a liability shield for business, aid for state and local governments, stimulus checks for all Americans, and a boost in unemployment compensation for workers who have lost their jobs. From a purely economic perspective, the right solution is easy: all of the above. From a political standpoint, however, that's unrealistic. Including all 4 provisions would push the overall price tag to more than $1 trillion, a red line for a crucial block of Republican senators. Ideally, those senators would realize that the risks of doing too little right now far outweigh the risks of doing too much. The U.S. job market is already feeling the impact from the latest wave of the pandemic, and there is no sign that it's near its end. Given how staunchly Republicans resisted spending half of that amount, even when it had the potential to save Donald Trump's presidency, odds are that they simply are unwilling to go higher. In that case, if something has to go, it should be the stimulus checks. These checks were a hugely successful part of the CARES Act passed in March, and I strongly supported them. They were a way of buying insurance for a crisis that was still unfolding. They also bought a lot of goodwill with the American public and made a real difference for tens of millions of Americans. 9 months later, however, it's clear that most U.S. households are in solid shape. What should concern Congress are those Americans who, through no fault of their own, are unable to work amid the pandemic. Leaving these workers without crucial support will only fuel a backlash against the lockdown measures that are necessary to minimize the effect of what is hopefully the last wave of the pandemic. Economically and morally, Congress's most important task is building a bridge for these workers between now and when a vaccine is widely available. When Congress first passed enhanced benefits in March, there was understandably concern that many workers would earn more on unemployment than they could on the job. That, in turn, would have made it difficult for employers to rehire them if COVID faded over the summer. Those fears turned out to be overblown for 2 reasons. First, while warm weather did help reduce COVID in the Northeast, increased use of air conditioning helped it spread throughout the Sun Belt. Second, the vast majority of furloughed workers were more concerned with keeping their jobs over the long term than with keeping the temporary windfall of enhanced unemployment benefits. The data suggests that the vast majority of those unemployed workers used those benefits to keep their current expenditures steady and add to their savings. That prudence helped stabilize the economy, but that cushion of savings will soon run out. When it does, those unemployment workers will be forced to cut back on spending. That reduction in spending will then make it harder for businesses trying to get back on their feet. This is the exact opposite of what the economy needs if it's going to bounce back once a vaccine is widely available. Sending out checks is popular, and from a pure risk management standpoint, more than worth the expense. If, however, Congress has to cut back on something to get a deal, then it should be the stimulus checks, not the expanded unemployment benefits. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, December 15th. Gwen Lewis. Gwen Lewis of Coleman, Texas, passed peacefully and left this world behind on Thursday, November 10th at her daughter's home in Coleman, Texas, where she had been residing. She was born Gwen Vaughn on June 29, 1932, in Wellington, to Reverend Raymond Vaughn and Vida Reeves Vaughn. Gwen is preceded in death by her husband, Dave Lewis, her parents, Reverend Raymond and Vida Vaughn, three brothers, Kenneth Vaughn, Leonard Vaughn, and Ted Vaughn. She is survived by two children, Mike Lewis and wife Diana of Blooming Grove, Cindy McLean and husband Bill of Coleman, one brother, Ben Vaughn, and wife Judy of Plano, four grandchildren, and six great-grandchildren. A graveside service will be at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, December 16th, at the Fairview Cemetery in Wellington, Texas, with Mike Lewis officiating. Viewing will begin on Saturday, December 12th, at Stephen's Funeral Home, 400 West Pecan Street in Coleman. A viewing will be held on Tuesday, December 15th from 4 to 6 p.m. at Adams Funeral Home, 1300 East Avenue, Wellington, Texas. Memorials are suggested in memory of Gwen to the Alzheimer's Association at www.alz.org or to Coleman Home Health and Hospice, 406 West Elm Street, Coleman, Texas, 76834. Remembrances, condolences, and messages of comfort can be expressed to the family at www.livingmemorials.com. Stephen's Funeral Home is honored to serve the Lewis family. Joan D. Braden. Joan D. Braden, 85, of Midland, passed away on December 11th. Viewing will be from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, December 19th at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home. There will be a celebration of life at Grace Lutheran Church on a date to be determined after the holidays. Joan was born on February 15, 1935, in Worms, Nebraska, to Fred and Agatha Luby. Joan is survived by her husband Bill, son David Braden, daughter Benny Cadwell and her husband Greg Cadwell, her sisters June Stanley Anderson and husband Jerry, and Vicky Brown Wark and husband Tim, three grandsons and four great-grandsons. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made to www.npwelsh.com. Lois File. Lois File, 93, peacefully entered eternal rest on December 3rd with her husband of 68 years at her side. Known to her many friends as Cindy and to close family as the Bat, she made an indelible impression on everyone she met with infectious laughter, compassion, and style. Lois was born April 25, 1927, in Louisville, Kentucky, to Lana Eleanor Hedgepeth and Herman Edward Jackson. She is survived by her husband Bob, son Marty File, Robin, daughter Christy Bender, Mark, and son Brian File, Pam, along with four grandchildren. She was preceded in death by daughter Perry Ann File and by both of her parents. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Pat H. Foley & Company, 1200 West 34th Street, Houston, 77018. A visitation will be held there from 1 to 3 p.m. on Sunday, December 13th, followed by a memorial service at 3 p.m. A private interment will occur the following day in College Station. A live stream of the funeral service will be Sunday at 3 p.m. on the Facebook Pat H. Foley page, and a direct link will be placed on her obituary page. In lieu of flowers, family suggests a donation could be made to one of Lois's favorite charities, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, the local no-kill animal shelter of your choice, or the Alzheimer's Association. Patricia Patty White. Patricia Patty White, age 66, passed away December 5, 2020, after a brief illness. Patty was born December 3, 1954, in Odessa, Texas, to James and Frankie Rush and was raised in Odessa. Patty is preceded in death by her husband, Ronnie White, parents James and Frankie Rush, and sisters Kathy Rush and Debbie Litz. Patty is survived by her children, Father Rodney White of Midland, James White of Odessa, and Megan McLaren of Odessa, as well as her four grandchildren. Recitation of the Rosary will be held at 5 p.m. Wednesday, December 16th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Mass of Christian Burial will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, December 17th at St. Mary's Catholic Church, with Bishop Michael Siss and Father Rodney White officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Ruby Skelton. Ruby Skelton, 96, of Midland, passed away on Friday, December 11th in Midland. The family will receive friends from 5 to 6 p.m. Monday, December 14th at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Graveside service will be 10 a.m. Tuesday, December 15th at Westbrook Cemetery near Colorado City. Ruby was born August 11, 1924, to Terry and Artie Smith Padgett around the Decatur, Texas area. Those left to remember her are her children Don, Catherine Skelton, Dale, Tina Skelton, and Linda Charles Hall. 6 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren. Brother Wayne Hudson of Rockland, California, sisters Betty Hicks of Prattville, Alabama, and Peggy Click of McLeod, Oklahoma. Ruby was preceded in death by her husband, J.E. Skelton, Jr., parents Artie and Dahl Hudson, Terry Padgett, granddaughter Tracy Skelton, brother Terry Beau Padgett. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to Ruby's memory to Janet's Closet in care of Middle Memorial Hospital Foundation, 400 Roslyn Redfern Grover Parkway, Midland, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Wendy Ludeke. Wendy Ludeke, age 57, passed away Wednesday, December 9th in Midland, Texas, after suffering a severe stroke. Wendy was preceded in death by her parents, James and Barbara Ludeke. She is survived by her brother, James Pat Ludeke, and his wife, Melinda, her nieces, Brittany Espinoza, and her husband, Gus, and Kimber Ludeke Barrientos, and her husband, Juan. Her great-nieces and nephews, Luis Ileana and Jacob Gonzalez, C.J. Hunt, and Melody Barrientos, her dogs Agnew and Winston, and her cats Kirby and Gracie. A chapel service will be held on Tuesday, December 15th at Ellis Funeral Home, officiated by Scott Shepherd of One Hope Church of Christ. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. Death Notices. Joe Marcos Diaz, Jr. Joe Marcos Diaz, Jr., 65, of Midland, passed away Thursday, December 10th. Viewing will be at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel on Tuesday, December 15th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Rosary also will be held Tuesday evening at 7 p.m. A funeral mass will be held at St. Stephen's Catholic Church on Wednesday, December 16th, from 10 a.m. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. He is survived by Aaron Diaz. Jose Esteban Cortez. Jose Esteban Cortez, 65, of Midland, passed away Monday, December 7th. Viewing will be at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel on Sunday, December 13th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Rosary will be held Sunday evening at 7 p.m. A funeral mass will be held at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church on Monday, December 14th, at 10 a.m. Burial services to immediately follow at Serenity Memorial Garden. He is survived by his mother, Rosario Reyes Mayoral, his son, Julio Cortez, his daughters, Claudia Ronquillo, Michelle Cortez, and Perla Munoz, and 9 grandchildren.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, December 15th, 2020. Front page. Stop the spread, wear a mask, protect yourself and others against COVID-19. Runoff decision coming this Tuesday. Didn't vote early? Get to the polls on Election Day in local races. oanews@oaoa.com. It's been a long campaign season in Odessa, but it will finally be over today as voters will decide the makeup of the Odessa City Council. Early voting ended Friday with 4,015 early or absentee votes that will be added to today's Election Day totals, with three hot runoffs for mayor and two city council seats on the line. It's been a brutal race locally, with former District 2 Councilman Dewey Bryant and Javier Hoven competing to succeed Mayor David Turner as mayor of Odessa, as the city struggles through both COVID-19 and oil and gas woes. Both Turner and Bryant have termed out of their current seats and are seeking other city offices. Hoven is a former councilman in District 5 from 1996 to 1999, who resigned prior to the end of his term. He later ran in 2010, but lost to Dean Combs. Turner and Denise Swanner are seeking the at-large council seat, while the District 1 race is between Mark Motta and appointed incumbent Michael K. Shelton Sr. Shelton was appointed earlier in the year by the City Council after Councilman Malcolm Hamilton abruptly resigned. The runoff election was called because candidates failed to garner 50% of the vote plus one, which is required to be declared the winner. Bryant received 43% of the vote, and Hoven snared 40% of the vote during the November 3rd general election. In the at-large council race, Turner claimed 45% of the vote, and Swanner garnered 29%. Turner has served two terms as mayor, and Swanner is a newcomer to local politics. In District 1, Motta picked up 44% of the vote, and Shelton received 19%. Motta is also a political newcomer. Only Odessan Stephen Thompson won his race in November when he defeated Rachel Miner for the District 2 seat. Thompson received 55% of the vote, Miner 45%. City of Odessa residents who live in Midland County must vote at the Odessa Country Club, number 1 Fairway Drive, on Election Day. Election Day locations in Odessa will include the Globe Theater at Odessa College, Salinas Community Building, and First Church of the Nazarene Gymnasium. Voting hours will be 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Giving back. One Objective members, back row, stand with Rangel, Evans, and Biggs family for a portrait before giving the family's $1,000 checks to help with the holidays Monday inside the Boys and Girls Club. Local organization helps families in need by Royal McGregor, RMCGREGOR at OAOA.com. One Objective, a newly founded organization, surprised three families with a check for $1,000. The checks were given out early Monday evening at the Woodson Boys and Girls Club. Chris Cole, a member of the 14-person organization, said this group wanted to assist families during the holidays. "For us, it was really important for us to do something," Cole said. "We are a very young group of men that have come together in recent months. Every last one of us, at some point in our life, were raised in the Boys and Girls Club. We just knew this was an opportunity for us to make an impact. Our main objective is to serve. It's a very heartfelt opportunity to do something for people who are in a position less fortunate than some of us." One of the families that One Objective helped on Monday evening was Deanne Evans and her six children. Evans' children are 16, 15, 14, 9, 8, and 2. Evans, who works for Focused Care of Midland, was unaware that the check totaled $1,000. She said all those funds will go toward her children as Christmas rapidly approaches. "I haven't been able to get them anything all year long," Evans said. "Everything will go toward them, anything they need." Cole said this organization was born from the events of 2020. One Objective includes individuals from all walks of life, whether it's former professional athletes, businessmen in the oil and gas industry, motivational speakers, and various businessmen. Everything about 2020, the pressures of 2020, the challenges of 2020, Cole said. It started really early on for some of us. What really was a meeting at breakfast turned into 14 guys getting together and doing some things for the city of Odessa. There are a lot of challenges out there. We want to be part of the solution. Avalos Barber Phillips mourned. Attorneys, OC art professor remembered as exemplary professionals. By Bob Campbell, B-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. Three icons of Odessa have died, attorneys Richard Avalos and Lawrence Barber, and former longtime Odessa College art professor and artist Barry Phillips the Elder. They were remembered Monday as stalwart men who practiced their professions in an exemplary manner and who were proud of and loyal to their hometown. Avalos and Barber died over the weekend, and Phillips last Wednesday. Avalos and Barber's services were pending, and Phillips was held privately. Richard was a true gentleman and a real character, said District Attorney Bobby Bland Monday. He was from the old school and had lots of stories. I was blessed to spend time with him and really get to know him. He was an amazing man, Bland said. Avalos enjoyed reminiscing about his mentor, famed criminal defense lawyer Warren Burnett, and tell other stories about the early days of his career. Odessa has lost a great servant and a great leader in Richard, the DA said. He was very friendly and warm, but also tenacious. He had a strong fighting spirit, but was a friendly, warm guy, very funny and charming. He was one of the pillars of our legal community. Bland appreciated Barber as a ferocious advocate for his clients. Larry and I had a different relationship early in my career in family law cases, and we had a number of heated battles in the courtroom after I became DA, he said. I had found it difficult to get along with him, but I had considered him a good friend for the past number of years. I'll miss him. We have lost a true champion for our citizens because he was willing to battle on any case, no matter what. There is a huge hole in our legal community now with his loss. Tryon Lewis, who was the 161st Judicial District Judge from 1985 to 2006, said the news of Avalos and Barber's deaths is devastating for Odessa and certainly for our legal community. It's hard to bear any time of the year, and it is especially hard during the holiday season, Lewis said. Both Richard and Larry were practicing when I got here. They were very active lawyers, great mentors to other lawyers, including me, as we came up and became trial lawyers ourselves. They are irreplaceable. Richard was working for Warren Burnett when I first met him. He loved the law and being part of the legal community, and he was so helpful to other lawyers. Lewis said Avalos and his wife Delma, president of the ECISD school board and a former Odessa College history instructor, took an active role in community affairs, and the community is a much better place because of them. Richard had a lot of pride, but he was never arrogant, and that's a good way to be. Lewis said Barber was a trial lawyer all the time. Larry was a fearless advocate for his clients and a great mentor to young lawyers, he said. He was generous with his advice when it was sought. County Attorney Dusty Gallivan said Avalos was one of the nicest attorneys and one of the nicest people I ever met. It was always a pleasure working with Richard, he said. He taught me professionalism, how to act in court, and how to speak to clients and opposing counsel. He was compassionate and understanding of his clients' situations, whatever those might be. Gallivan said Barber was a zealous advocate of his clients' positions. We didn't always see eye to eye, but I respected that Larry advocated for his clients, he said. He had a certain way of doing things, and that was just the way it was. But he was a good guy. He always did a good job for his clients and advocated for them, regardless of what those positions might be. Avalos earned an associate degree in education and pre-law studies at Odessa College, got 90 hours credit at the University of Texas in Austin, graduated from St. Mary's School of Law in San Antonio, and opened his practice here in 1975. There was a time when I was trying more murder cases than any lawyer in the area, Avalos said, in September 2016. I did encounter prejudice, but nothing to discourage me from being a good lawyer. It seemed that the jury panels weren't fully accepting me as a lawyer, so I had trouble picking the best juries I could get for those particular clients. Sometimes I stayed here, at his 520 North Lee Avenue office, all night, researching the law and looking at old files to see what I had done in similar cases. I went from here to the courtroom. Avalos had been a member of the Odessa College Board of Trustees since 2002 and had been active in the Ector County Democratic Party, Tejano Democrats, and League of United Latin American Citizens. Appointed by Governor Mark White from 1983 to 89, he was a member of the Texas Youth Commission Governing Board, setting policy for the state's juvenile detention system. Richard Avalos will be missed by this community. He made an impact on all who were blessed to cross his path. He was a kind and honorable man who cared about his family, West Texas, his culture, his community, and Odessa College. From a personal perspective, Mr. Avalos served as Odessa College Board Chair when I was hired as Odessa College President. He went out of his way to welcome me, to help me acclimate, and to support me. I will miss him, OC President Gregory Williams said in a statement. The Avaloses have three children and two grandchildren. Barbara was a native of Seagraves who graduated from Baylor Law School in 1962 and spent the first 6 years of his career in his hometown. From 1970 to 79, he was in Monahans, where he was district attorney from 1974 to 75. I average 100 criminal cases a year of all kinds, Barber said in November 2017. These people have a right to an attorney, and I spend more time on appointments than I would if I was hired to make sure I get them done right. Petting Jackson, the 3-year-old West Highland White Terrier with whom he walked each morning and afternoon, he said, "The only kind of case I won't take is an animal cruelty." The closest I ever got was year before last, after a man and a woman were fussing, and he threw a hatchet at her, and she dodged, and he hit the dog and killed it. He wasn't intending to kill the dog, and if it had just been the dog, I wouldn't have taken it. Barber was 1/8 Osage Indian, a 32nd degree Mason, and past president of the Rotary Club of Greater Odessa. He and his wife Helen have 3 children, and 3 grandchildren. Edwin Barry Phillips Jr. was an Ardmore, Oklahoma native whose family moved to Odessa in 1948. He was a 1957 Odessa High School graduate who attended Odessa College and the Art Center School of Design in Los Angeles before taking a master's degree in art education at Texas Tech. Phillips began his teaching career at Howard Payne University in Brownwood and returned here in 1970 to chair the OC Art Department. He and his wife Sharon have 2 sons, 2 granddaughters, and 3 step-grandchildren. He was 81. Before his retirement in 2014, Phillips said he would miss the people at OC and his daily interactions with them. "My students were wonderful," he said. "Foremost, I will miss my students." Averaging 300 students a year, he estimated that he had taught 13,000 during the 43 years of his career. "Some of them I see in public and I call out their names and we talk," he said. "Others have been lifelong friends." Williams at OC said Phillips was one of the longest-serving and most iconic instructors in the long history of Odessa College. "He served our college, this community, and its students very well and very proudly. His voice, his art, his strength, his positive attitude, and his kindness were his calling cards and will be remembered. On a personal note, when I was hired as president of Odessa College, Barry Phillips the Elder welcomed me as a friend and offered me his full support. I will always be thankful for his wisdom and the knowledge he shared with all who would listen, Williams added.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.